Well, kicking off the new year on Business TV, for me at least, is a conversation with the Leader of the Opposition and a senior member of the Government of National Unity, John Steenhuisen. John, I guess you could have hoped for a better start to the new year than getting attacked by Action SA. It's becoming clearer and clearer now that Action SA is, well, having a go at the DA, almost like an EFF alternative to the ANC, that Action SA is now becoming an alternative to the DA. I mean, we can talk about that in a moment and your thoughts on that. But let's start with the allegations of you having a, quote, multi-million rand blue light luxury SUV vehicle fleet.
Well, let me start off by saying Happy New Year to you, Alec, and of course the Biz News viewers. It's great to be back as we start this year. I think, as a famous British politician famously said, being attacked by Action SA is rather like being savaged by a dead sheep, particularly when it leaves their own hypocrisy and skirt throwing and we're showing. And we'll get to that now. Let me just set out the fact, because I notice that other news outlets like the Daily Maverick, Victoria Regan, others have chosen to jump on the bandwagon rather than actually examine the facts. So what are the facts, Alex? Let's set them out. Firstly, all ministers, not only in South Africa, all members of executive government are provided with official vehicles to conduct their official duties. These are not for personal use. They are for the execution of executive functions. In the South African context, ministers are provided with a vehicle in Cape Town to attend to their parliamentary responsibilities, and one in Pretoria in order to attend to the executive responsibilities as it relates to that province. When I assumed office as the Minister of Agriculture, I inherited an Audi A7 in Cape Town that had been purchased in 2019 and long paid off by the Department of Agriculture. It had been used by Toko Didiza in the past. It has 136,000 kilometers on the clock. And of course, I resisted the temptation and urge as new ministers come into office to purchase new vehicles. That has been the standard approach in the past. Instead, I said quite clearly, I'm happy to use the existing vehicle, mindful of the fact that we have to save costs, that the country's economy is not in a good state. And I think it's a good example that we don't purchase any new vehicles. The situation was slightly more complex when it came to the official vehicle for Pretoria, because that vehicle was owned by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And therefore, the Audi A7 that had been used by Minister Didiza there, also purchased in 2019, also with a similar mileage on the clock, had to then be transferred to Minister Nyonso. The department then came to me and said, well, look, we now need to buy you a new vehicle for your use in Pretoria, because we've had to give the official vehicle to the Minister of Land Reform and Rural Development. I insisted that there would be no new vehicle purchased. I instead asked them to bring me a schedule of all vehicles currently in the Agriculture Department's fleet. There I found a Toyota Prado that had been purchased in 2019 for former Minister Zotwana, who was the Minister of Agriculture at the time. The car had around 230,000 kilometers on the clock. There was some concern expressed by the department because vehicles are supposed to, by handbook, be swapped out at 150,000 kilometers. I insisted, I'm quite happy with the Toyota Prado. At 7 years old, it has high mileage, but mindful of the fact that we need to save costs, I would utilize that vehicle. So there'd be no new vehicles purchased by Minister John Steenhuisen. Minister John Steenhuisen uses two vehicles that are utilized by former ministers, which are over 7 years old with high mileage and for which no expenditure has been incurred by the department, because these vehicles were paid off 7 years ago when they were originally purchased. Now, because these vehicles are not the personal vehicles of the minister, and I want to make it very clear, when I drive myself around for private use, I make use of my 1979 Mercedes-Benz 280 SE S-Class, which I really enjoy driving around. And those who are in Cape Town will be very familiar with that vehicle and my use thereof. If not, I utilize my wife's Land Rover Discovery 4 for transit around. So these vehicles are not private vehicles. They're official vehicles. And because these were inherited vehicles from two ministers, of course, the security features that were existing on the vehicles were there in place. Now, I'm not sure if Action South Africa, A, wants me to attend to my official duties on a bicycle, but sadly, the distances and the terrain and the requirements would preclude that. Or they want me to now go to the expense of now removing these systems off these cars. If that'll make them happy, then, you know, I'd be quite happy to do so. But it's going to incur expenditure. Instead, like all DA ministers, we've instructed those who are responsible for driving these vehicles that blue lights or the security features are only able to be utilized in the case of a life or death situation where there is no alternative. Now, the hypocrisy that needs to be exposed here by Action South Africa is the fact that they currently have a mayor in Tshwane who utilizes two luxury BMW vehicles, both fitted with security features, for the execution of her official duties. Their speaker in the city of Johannesburg also has two luxury German sedans fitted with blue lights and security features, which she utilizes for the execution of her official duties. So what you have here is Action SA trying to manufacture a storm in a teacup. And instead of actually complimenting a minister on not buying new vehicles, on utilizing old vehicles, they're now trying to manufacture, aided and abetted by the Daily Maverick, some sort of scandal. There's no scandal here. No expenditure has been spent by the Department of Agriculture on any vehicle for me. These are vehicles that were in an existing fleet and which, by utilizing, has actually saved money. Additionally, when ministers are not in Gauteng province or in the Western Cape, they are entitled to hire vehicles to attend to their official duties. Now, again, I'm not sure how Action SA expects people to execute their official functions if they are not able to utilize vehicles to get to the communities that need to see them. And in my case, in the agriculture ministry, many of these are far flung and in very difficult areas to reach. Nonetheless, like all DA ministers, we've made a commitment that when we hire vehicles, we will always try and use the most cost-effective option. And that is why when I was in Limpopo for the presidential Imbizo, I insisted that we hired a Corolla Cross for utilization on that day because we were not going into any tricky terrain or anything. We were going to the local city hall, and that was the most cost-effective option on that day. And I'm proud of the fact, Alec, that I and DA ministers have done everything we can to cut costs on offices, on cars, on all of these other expenditures, and to focus this expenditure in our departments instead on service delivery and the like. And so I really don't understand why Action SA is getting away with A, their hypocrisy, and B, their ability to be able to now try and manipulate this as some sort of scandal, when what it should be is an example to the rest of the country. I would close by on this particular match by saying that had this been nothing more than a puerile political stunt by Action South Africa, why did they not begin their crusade by stripping their executive office bearers of these so-called perks that they want ministers to not have and lead by example? Instead, the mayor of Tshwane and the speaker of the Johannesburg City Council still swan around in their vehicles in complete juxtaposition to these false protestations now by Action SA. But it has become typical of the playground politics that they've descended into. Of course, nobody has made the obvious dotting of the lines and joining up of those dots is the fact that when Herman Mashaba himself, the leader of Action SA, was the mayor of Johannesburg, utilized a BMW X5 convoy, which was very clearly kitted out with blue lights in order to ensure his security. This is the standard practice in executives around the world. And I think people should be judged, Alec, not on these allegations, but on the facts. Because in this case, the facts belie the fantasy being spread by Action SA.
You've obviously done a lot of thinking, as it's not often that that I have somebody who goes on for so long and so fascinating on unpacking what you did there. But I need to get back to their statement. And they say, first of all, including. So the perception is being created that there's now a big fleet, including the Prada, which you've explained, Audi Q7, which you've explained. And they also said a BMW X5. Now, where does that come into the whole story?
The BMW X5 is a mystery to me, but it's been solved in recent days. The BMW X5, I think, is a 2017 or 2018 BMW X5. It's never been utilized by me. It is apparently a backup vehicle for the executive, both the minister and the deputy minister's offices, that if one vehicle goes in for servicing, instead of hiring a vehicle at huge expense, there is a vehicle on standby to replace it. I have not had the opportunity to utilize that vehicle. The vehicles that I've used are my 7-year-old Audi A7 and the Prado, both of which were inherited from the previous minister, and in the case of the Prado, from two ministers previously.
And the other part of the statement that kind of surprises us, but I guess you guys in politics are used to being able to say what you like because you have parliamentary privileges, and maybe that extends into the public domain as well, is that they have each of these vehicles have, oh no, I see a purchase price exceeding R1 million. So maybe they did cost R1 million back then, but today the value would be, obviously, from what you've told us, a lot less.
Well, the value is nil on those vehicles because the vehicles were purchased 7 years ago by the department for those former ministers. Had there been a situation where I assumed office and decided to purchase new vehicles, a decision I consciously made not to do, there would have been an expenditure. There is no expenditure in the current budget for vehicles for the Minister of Agriculture. And that is why it is completely disingenuous to say that this is a price tag that I have now inflicted on the people of South Africa. That price tag was paid many, many years ago, and those vehicles have long since been written down in the department's asset register to a point where, you know, as I said, the Prado itself should have been probably sold off under the handbook. The handbook says when a vehicle reaches 150,000, it should be swapped out. I've said I'm very happy to use the Prado with its 239,000 kilometers on it. I'm happy to use the Audi, and I have no intention to change either of those vehicles. And I think that this is something that people should be congratulating members of the executive on when costs are saved, rather than throwing brickbats at them in the most disingenuous manner in which Action SA has chosen to do so. But when you have nothing left, and after a terrible election result, and you still have not been able to convene an elective conference after 6 years to elect your office bearers in your party, I suppose these are the straws that are left to grab for a party that has run out of ideas, run out of road, and run out of electoral support.
Something interesting in all of this is that the press statement was published on Politics Web today, and yet it says that you have responded, you've had a written reply. In your written reply, did you outline the facts that you've given us?
Absolutely. It's there for everybody to see. The vehicle ages, the vehicle costs, etc., are all set out there in that parliamentary response.
So it's just politics, in other words. They're making up a story to make you look bad by using some of the facts. Yeah, okay.
It's puerile politics. It's playground politics. Look, Alec, we've got big issues facing our country. We have to, in this year, turn the economy around. We have to get jobs created. We have to attract investment. And we've got to get more South Africans into work than ever before. These are the big issues of our times. But of course, because Action South Africa has no solutions to these big issues, they choose to play these petty politics and to twist fantasy that somehow I've gone and spent R2.8 million on vehicles that were long paid off and which, you know, are well within the bounds of the ministerial handbook and are well within the bounds of my own party's ethical use of executive benefits handbook that we have for DA ministers. And it would be very nice if Action SA, if they're serious about this matter, set about removing these things from their own executive members, and then perhaps they could come with some credibility on this matter. However, their slip is sadly showing, as always, with a party that grasps at straws, because it has no solutions for the big issues facing South Africa. We're getting on with resolving those big issues. And I'm proud of the fact that I've not spent a cent of departmental money on purchasing vehicles for my tenure as the minister.
I know we spent quite a lot of time on this, but it is important, given that you have stated out previously that you are driving a second-hand Toyota Prado, and it looks, for those who are going to believe the story that's been put out, that you have no credibility. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to just test this with you. But on to more important issues, I guess, from a broader perspective, and that is how the Government of National Unity is doing. there were quite a lot of photographs of you around social media when you went to China and met with President Xi. And only in the last couple of weeks, we hear that the Chinese electric vehicle manufacturers are being encouraged to set up a shop in South Africa in the same way as many of the European manufacturers and have done in the past. Does this tell us that these overseas jamborees, as many describe them, actually do have some kind of positive benefit?
Absolutely, Alec. And I think that certainly when I get invited to any overseas event or conference, I always filter it through a number of key filters before we accept invitations. And believe you me, as Minister of Agriculture, I weekly have invitations to a variety of countries flowing into the office, wanting meetings, wanting to discuss trade. I filter it through the lens of, is this trip going to have a net benefit for South Africa? Will South Africans benefit from the outcomes of this trip? And how do we make this work for South Africa? And those are the trips. I've turned down many overseas trips because I didn't feel that those criteria were present in order for that. As it came to China, I didn't have anything to do with the electric vehicle discussions. Those were led by Minister Park Style. However, I think we should welcome manufacturing of electric vehicles wherever it comes from, whether it's from Europe or from China. Certainly, China appears to have the cutting-edge technology, and I was really impressed in Beijing just how quiet downtown Beijing was as a result of the fact, and clean as a result of the fact that a large percentage of vehicles now on Beijing roads are electric vehicles. And I think this could only be good for the environment. It could only be good for in terms of being able to make cheaper electric vehicles accessible to more people in South Africa. And so these trips I do have a benefit. My reason for being there was to open up the beef and dairy trade for South African farmers to be able to trade with China, to lift the outright ban on South African beef as a result of foot and mouth, and to move to a compartmentalized approach, which we very successfully were able to navigate. And of course, then being able to get dairy products accessed to China, as well as then a greasy wool protocol, which would also, much like the beef, allow us to circumvent an outright ban on South African greasy wool as a result of a foot and mouth outbreak. So there are benefits. This week, I'm going to Kampala. I'm leaving today. We're negotiating the new African Agriculture and Agri-Processing Development Plan, which is a integrated approach to how we solve some of the problems facing agriculture in Africa, given its importance. And this is obviously very, very important for South Africa. Firstly, there's an opportunity for bilaterals with our SACU counterparts, where we have a lot of integration. There's going to be very interesting discussions on corridor developments, how we integrate corridors to allow access of African agricultural products to the rest of the world, harmonization of some biotechnology and other innovations, and to develop a 10-year plan for how we can integrate African agricultural interaction on the continent. Africa is a very important market for South African agricultural products. If you speak to anybody in many of the key agricultural areas, most notably wine, they see Africa as the largest growth market for us. And so it's very important that we position South African agriculture and South African agricultural products at the very heart of the AU agenda for agriculture over the next 10 years. And I'm looking forward to the next 3 days discussions in Kampala and making sure that South Africa's positions, our strategies, are heard loud and clear in those corridors.
Is it a bit like CEOs of listed companies, public companies, having to decide where and when they invest their time and allocate their resources? In other words, there is this perception amongst the public that, well, once you become a senior member of government, you can flit around the world from conference to conference and not really have much responsibility to deliver anything. Are you looking at this, or it sounds to me like the way you've described it, as a CEO of a major company would?
Absolutely. You've got to look at where your strategic advantages are. And as a department, we've sat down with the agricultural sector and said to them, Where do you see the opportunity for growth? Where would you like government to go and start opening up channels and pathways? The fruit, the beef, the red meat industry, the horticultural crew, the citrus crew have all given us the places where they feel that we should be pushing against those doors to get them opened. And I've taken my lead from the agricultural sector in terms of where we are focusing our efforts as the Department of Agriculture to open up new opportunities for new trading opportunities across the world, but also to look at how we can deepen and expand existing trade opportunities through things like AGOA, the SAEU arrangement, and others, but to look then as well for new markets. And so this is all an initiative, not on the back of a cigarette box in the minister's office, but we have a very, very strong collaboration with the agricultural sector in South Africa, particularly through organized agriculture. And they're the ones who say, look, we see opportunities in Saudi Arabia for red meat. We're seeing opportunities in the Middle East for South African fruit products. We're seeing opportunities in Thailand for blueberries and other things. We're seeing opportunities for wine across South Africa. It's my job then as the Minister of Agriculture to go and start to have discussions about how we can get protocols in place for the exchange of these agricultural goods. And that can only happen at a minister-to-minister level. Otherwise, these things remain dreams on a piece of paper. But as I said, I don't leave the country unless I have a very clearly set or a predetermined set of outcomes that I would like to achieve at the end of that. And my motif to the department is always, what does a win look like for us when we leave this conference? What do we regard as a win? And that then becomes the focus area of our interventions and our initiatives during these conferences.
I'm off to Davos in a couple of weeks' time, and I can't wait again to get an injection of the global wisdom that you get there. I know a lot of people criticize it for being a globalists forum, but it's going to be real interesting this year. Are you going to be attending this year now as a government minister?
Yeah, the president has asked me to form part of the delegation to Davos. I've never been before. I'm obviously going with an open mind, not an empty one, and looking forward to some of those engagements. And again, I'm on the hunt for agricultural investment. I'm on the hunt for assistance from big financial organizations on assisting us with blended finance schemes for small-scale farmers. I'm looking for assistance with rapid advancement of technology. And I'm very glad there's a big AI focus at Davos this year. And I'm looking forward, and I've asked the hosts there to try and plug me into many there. AI is going to have a big role to play in agriculture going forward. And if we're able to use AI to put an extension officer into the pocket through cell phone technology and AI technology and marrying those two into the pockets of every farmer, wherever they may be, and the use of AI to identify plant diseases, animal diseases, to look at how we can offer online real-time advice to farmers in the field, I think it's going to be a huge opportunity. So that's one of the big focuses for me at Davos, is how we can harness those particular areas in the service of South African agriculture.
I think you really are in for a treat. I've seen people in your positions not get much sleep, though. So I suppose that's one thing. You're going to have lots and lots of meetings. John, just to close off with, on a very sad note, the passing of Peter Mansfield. He was from KwaZulu-Natal. R.W. Johnson has written a beautiful obituary to him, which we're publishing on BizNews today. Given your that the two of you were in the same party, in the same province, I presume you are as saddened by his passing as many others are.
Yes, of course. I mean, when I joined politics, Peter was in the sort of twilight of his career. But certainly Peter and Lindy, his previous wife, were big stalwarts of the Progressive Federal Party and the Progressive Party and the Democratic Party. And so I got to meet them on a number of occasions when I was still a young activist of the party. But also going into the Durban City Council, where I served for 10 years, Peter Mansfield's name was writ large there. Really, when he was on the Manco of Durban, he was the chairman of the Manco, some of the more catalytic strategic decisions were made on how to position Durban as a premier world-class city. Peter and that particular Manco team at the time were the brains behind the ICC, for instance, the Durban Exhibition Centre, Expo Durban, all of these things that put Durban onto the map And Peter, you know, was not always the easiest of people to deal with, but certainly somebody who was not afraid to share his opinions and views. And I think he left active politics too soon, but obviously is remembered with great fondness in the era of Margaret Ambler Moore, of Libby Goodall, and Peter and Margaret Winter and the others. Incredible work that they did to put Durban on the map, and served as an inspiration for younger politicians entering civic life at a city level about just what you can actually achieve at a local government level with the right strategic initiatives and the right focus on the right things.
As an interesting kind of ad appendix to that, I met Peter when he was running an internet business. He'd left to try and establish a financial nest egg for himself, because back in those days, running the Durban municipality wasn't going to give you much of a retirement egg. And he'd built a very successful online business, which subsequently he sold, and I think was able to live out his past few years well. But it just shows you that when people are in public service, they're as smart as anybody who are in any other sector of society as well. And often that's something that is not fully appreciated. John Cena, it's been good talking with you.
Yeah, I think as well, just before we close, I mean, I think it's also important to remember that politicians are humans too. You know, we, like ordinary humans, we get things right, we get things wrong, we have great achievements, we make mistakes. And I think that the day that you lose that humanity in your politics, we might as well replace all politicians with AI robots then, if that's to be the case. But we're human, and we're subject to the same human fallibilities and frailties as the next man. And I think that's an important thing to hold on to.
But do you get as pissed off as anybody else when you get people talking nonsense about you, as is clearly the case with these vehicles? I mean, John, like, you know, I've been attacked on many, by mainly competitors, but it's nothing compared with the kind of bullshit that you have to put up with almost on a daily basis.
Look, I mean, I don't get irritated with the puerile politics of parties like Action SA, because it's like criticizing a bird for flying or a fish for swimming. It's all they've got. It's all they can do. I do get irritated with organizations, and I'm sorry to use your platform to say it, but I've written it in a piece that'll be going out later, the Daily Maverick. But even with the most basic journalistic ethics and the most basic journalistic efforts, would have been able to see when these vehicles were purchased, that I've not spent any money on these vehicles. And the point I made in the piece, Alex, is if I'd pushed somebody off the road using a blue light convoy, it would have been front page news. There would surely by now have been some social media outrage and footage of me pushing people off the road in some blue light brigade. It's not there. And, you know, even the most basic tenets of journalism say it's not your job to listen to people arguing about whether it's raining or not. It's your job to put your head out the window and determine for yourself whether it's raining. And it disappoints me that in their rush to criticize the DA, who they clearly have a very, very bent agenda against, that they would, you know, stoop to the levels where even the most basic principles of journalistic ethics are chucked out the window. And it's little wonder that so many people are leaving the Maverick, and it's little wonder that they're struggling the way that they are, because people are starting to see through this thin veneer that they have, where all it is about DA bashing rather than actually getting to grips with the facts. And the facts and the story belie the fantasy.
I'd like to believe that the editorial process has failed in this respect, and it isn't an agenda. But anyway, John, it's been good talking with you. All the very best in Kampala. Enjoy the engagements that you have there, and I look forward to seeing you in Davos later this month. John Cena is the leader of the opposition, the Democratic Alliance. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.